Thank you for tuning into the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. As I mentioned in the first half of this episode, we are looking at the lectionary text assigned for this week, August 14th, 2016. The lectionary texts are divided into readings from the Old Testament, the Psalms, the New Testament, and the Gospels. If you are joining us for the first time, I would like to say welcome. I'm so happy that you found us. If you are a returning listener, welcome back. Again, I'm always happy that you have come back and are joining me for another episode. I always try to explain a little bit of background before we get started. Again, it's the lectionary texts assigned for this week, August 14th, 2016. The lectionary texts are assigned readings over a three-year period that a lot of churches use. So they're a rotating list of assigned readings for each week. Again, they're split into the Old Testament, the Psalms, the New Testament, and the Gospels. And this episode itself is split into two parts. This is the second part, as I already mentioned. And in this second part, we'll be talking about the New Testament readings from Hebrews 11 and 12 and the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12. As I did mention in the first half of this episode, this week's texts are not easy. And the New Testament texts really aren't any easier than the Old Testament texts were. I was looking through some old notes, actually, from the last time I preached on these texts, and I came across a comment that my best friend made when I was telling her what I was working on for my sermon that week. And she said, "Oh, wow, those texts sound terrible. You should just preach on the Beatles instead." And she made me laugh, which is what she meant to do. And I have to say, though, she's not wrong. After all, when in doubt, fall back on the Beatles. All you need is love. And you can cover a variety of theological topics just with that one statement, "All you need is love." Sadly, though, I won't be preaching on the Gospel of the Beatles this week, but if you did manage to stick with me through the wrestling with the word that we did in the first half of this episode, I'm hopeful that you'll stay with me throughout this half. I'm excited to get started with you to talk about the text for this week, but we do have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about this week's text from Hebrews. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. The first text we will be discussing today is from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 29 through chapter 12, verse 2. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as if it were dry land. But when the Egyptians attempted to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had received the spies in peace. And what more should I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched raging fire, escaped the edge of the sword, won strength out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received their dead by resurrection. Others were tortured, refusing to accept release in order to obtain a better resurrection. Others suffered mocking and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned to death, they were sawn in two, they were killed by the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, persecuted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. Yet all these, though they were condemned for their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better, so that they would not, apart from us, be made perfect. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Again, this is Hebrews chapter 11, verse 29 through chapter 12, verse 2. And again, these texts this week are not easy. I mean, we've got these great examples of faith, but we've also got how difficult some of these people had in terms of their faith. There were all of those terrible descriptions of stoning and flogging and imprisonment and just, you know, the terrible things that certain people had to endure in order to have their faith, in order to live their lives of faith. Now, this is the second week that we've read from the book of Hebrews, and if you joined me last week, you might remember that the text then spoke about the faith, trust, and patience of Sarah and Abraham. So another example of faith, and this is just continuing that example. This community that Hebrews is written to had been going through difficult times, and the author of Hebrews was trying to encourage them to stay strong in their faith and to trust God's promises and God's timing. The community was frustrated that things weren't going well, and they were also frustrated by what they felt was a failure in God's promises. They expected the return of Jesus within their lifetimes, and it didn't seem like that was going to happen. So they were beginning to be frustrated, they were beginning to have doubts, they were beginning to maybe be afraid that those promises would not be fulfilled. The author then uses Sarah and Abraham as examples for the community because Sarah and Abraham continued to have faith in God's promises, even though neither of them actually lived to see the fulfillment of those promises. In fact, the fulfillment didn't happen for several generations after the original covenant was made with Abraham. And so you can see why the author turns to Sarah and Abraham as his example. And in today's text, the author continues to encourage the community, giving them more examples of faithfulness and the fulfillment of God's promises. There's this section that talks about the great cloud of witnesses, an impressive list of our forerunners in faith. And endurance is something that consistently features throughout the epistle to the Hebrews, throughout the letter to the Hebrews. This author passionately desires his audience to hold fast, to endure, and to remain strong until the end, whatever that end might be. In other words, he's trying to encourage the community to continue trusting God, to continue to remain in faith and faithful. In other words, they need to continue that relationship. They need to be patient and actively waiting. Hebrews 11 teaches them the nature of faith through word and story. By this 29th verse then in chapter 11, the author's recounting has already lifted up Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham and his family, and Moses. All of them trusted God even if they could not fully imagine what God's promises would entail. So he's lifting up more people who trusted God even when they couldn't see the fulfillment of those promises, even when they weren't sure what that fulfillment might look like. One of the commentaries that I read for this week was written by Amy L.B. Peeler, who is the associate professor of New Testament at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois. And she writes that God looked ahead and made provision for something better. Something better that concerns not just the faithful of the past, but also the faithful of the present, the author and his readers. The forebears in faith cannot reach that place of perfection without the present generation of the faithful. One of Abraham's promises involved a multitude of descendants. Until everyone joins the party, and here she references Hebrews 12, verse 22, until everyone resides in the household, Hebrews 3, 6, the promise remains unobtained. So she references back to that promise of Abraham that involved a multitude of descendants. And she says, until everyone is involved, everyone who is one of those descendants joins that party, resides in that household, then the promise remains unfulfilled, which might seem a little depressing if you think about it, in that term, but it's not supposed to. It's supposed to just mean that we're not there yet. And so she writes, the baton passes to them. The author paints a scene of the close of a race. As runners enter the stadium, they are surrounded by the crowd all around, the cloud of witnesses. Both proclaims the story of their own faith and expectantly waits for those running to endure in theirs. Get rid of anything that would trip you up, the author commands. With the cloud around you, keep your eyes before you on the ultimate runner, the one who created the race of faith and the only one who has reached its perfect end. Jesus endured an excruciating death and did not let the shame of his reproach squelch the joy that kept him going. This was the same joyful promise to which all of God's children look forward, residing with God and his people forever. And I really like the way she puts this. She gives us this great visual of this race, of everyone cheering the people who are currently running the race, cheering them on, encouraging them in that run, knowing that they have already run the race, have completed it in whatever time, in whatever fashion they've completed it, and they're now encouraging those who are currently running the race. This is the great cloud of witnesses, the ones that have gone before and continue to support the ones who are continuing to race. Another commentary that I read was from Eric Heen, the John H. P. Ruin professor in biblical studies at the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Philadelphia. And he writes, "Then comes this remarkable claim that for all of their greatness, these saints of faith," and he's referring to the ones that the author of Hebrews was referring to at the beginning of our reading, you know, Rahab and Moses and Noah, etc. He says, "For all of their greatness, these saints of faith did not receive what was promised. Their completion, their perfection, awaited the inbreaking of God's invisible word in the incarnate Christ, his perfect sacrifice and glorification at the right hand of God. In fact, their perfection still awaits the full realization of the unshakable kingdom of God that the present saints of God are in the process of receiving." So he's saying kind of the same thing that the other commentary was saying, that this is still ongoing. This is still awaiting that fulfillment, that bringing in of the kingdom, the completion of God's promises. And he continues by writing, "The pericope," and that just means that this reading, this section that we're reading, "the pericope closes with an exhortation that employs an athletic metaphor. Let us therefore run the race that is set before us." Similar to the present day Olympic event, and it's very appropriate since we're right in the middle of the Olympics right now. Similar to the present day Olympic event, ancient marathon races could end in a stadium. A final lap would be made in the presence of onlookers, or in other words, the great cloud of witnesses, who are cheering the exhausted runners on. In Hebrews, the onlookers are the very saints of old described throughout chapter 11, from Abel to the Maccabean martyrs. And in the festive atmosphere of an Olympian celebration, they await the race's end with eager anticipation. Yet this race, the text reminds, is different from all others. The course has been marked by Christ, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Only Jesus has run this course to its end, though by doing so has made it possible for all others to follow. The primary obstacle he faced, the shame of the cross, is vanquished by the power of the resurrection. In following the Christ crucified and risen, one is led through the obstacles of which life is full, including deep disgrace and suffering, and even death itself. So this is that encouragement. Even though the author of Hebrews lists all of those horrible things that happened to people of faith, he's still encouraging them, still giving Christ as the example of the one who's the only one who has run that race to completion, and who has then given us the ability to run that race as well, to try to get through those obstacles of life, knowing that we have this perfect example of faith in Christ. And we do have to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, we'll be talking more about this text from Hebrews. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, we were talking about this text from Hebrews and the race that it depicts, and we were talking about a commentary from Professor Eric Heen, who continues, "According to Hebrews, at the end of this race, this course of life awaits Christ, enthroned at the right hand of God. It is into this invisible presence we lean forward in faith as we run the course now set by Christ before us. When the last of the runners make it across the finish line, Hebrews suggests the stands of the stadium will be empty. The city of the living God, made up of the spirits of the righteous made perfect, will form around the enthroned Christ and innumerable angels in festal gathering, suffering death. All the enemies of God will be no more." Remarkably, this ongoing perfect worship of God is mediated a high priest who is Christ himself. And so here's this really lovely image that no matter how difficult the race has been, no matter how tired you are when you finally get to that end, when you do get to the stadium, you're cheered on continually by this great cloud of witnesses, this great cloud of people who have gone before you. And then finally, when everyone has crossed that finish line, we're given this image of being gathered around the throne of Christ, gathered together in this wonderful scene where sin, son, suffering, and death are no more. We're reminded by this text that faith is not easy. This image of the race, you know, running a race, not easy. It involves a certain level of effort. We're reminded by this by all of the examples of martyrdom, of suffering involved in the faith of the people that the author of Hebrews is referring to, because faith in that time wasn't always easy. You were often persecuted for your faith. We who are modern contemporary Christians who are in America or other free countries don't have this sense of martyrdom that a lot of people do. We may feel like we are mocked for our faith by certain people, but we don't have that same level. And we don't have the same level that people in other countries are of suffering in their faith. But it does still exist in the world. This text reminds us that having faith isn't always easy. Even just having faith and being out of step with the people around us, even though it's not as extreme as what the author of Hebrews is referring to, does remind us that being a follower of Jesus, being called by Christ, being called by God, can put us out of sync with the rest of the world. Our views aren't always popular. And so this is the truth of another kind, and there's a lot of truth-telling in the texts for this week, both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And this is truth of another kind. Truth that while Jesus calls us to do what Jesus calls us to do seems simple enough, it's not always easy. And we need the support and encouragement of our own clouds, those people who have gone before us, who are currently walking with us, and who can keep us focused on the truth of God's words rather than on the lies of false prophets. Notice that this list that the author of Hebrews gives us isn't a list of perfect people, but simply of people who sought to do the will of God in their own lives and who lived out their calls to the best of their abilities. By living this way, they were able to inspire others then to live their own lives, to follow their own calls, to live by the truth of God as they had been given it. And these are our ancestors in the faith. The great cloud of witnesses are all of those whose stories we read about each week in the Bible, and so many more. People whose stories are as familiar to us as our own, people whose stories we may never fully know. That cloud is made up of people close to us and people we have never met but whose words may have touched us in some way, people that we might not even know about, but who have shaped the faith of others, who have shaped our own faith. We have to ask ourselves the question, what is it about these people that inspire us and help us in our own lives of faith? And it makes me think about my own cloud of witnesses, which involves a lot of people. I mean, first and foremost, it involves members of my own family, my sister, my parents, my grandmother, who gave me their examples of faith, who live out their faith every day in simple ways, trying to do what they feel is right, trying to do what God is calling them to do. They're not always perfect at it, of course. They have their own struggles, but they inspire me every day. I have lots and lots of friends who are pastors. You know, when you go to seminary, you just end up with lots of friends who are pastors. I have amazing friends from seminary, some of whom went on to do other things with their call, not necessarily ordained ministry, but they give me their example every day of amazing faithfulness and struggle with trying to live their life of faith to the best of their ability and to the way they have been called. I've got examples of teachers, you know, from Martin Luther, who I read in seminary, to many of my professors who are wonderful and amazing and who taught me so much, not just in the classroom, but by their own lives as they told their own stories about their struggles with faith, of what they've learned through the years of living their lives of faith. I've got the authors of books, authors whose books, memoirs, thoughts, writings of whatever kind have helped to shape my own way of seeing God in the world. So this cloud is huge, and it's made up of so many different types of people. Many of the reasons why these people are important to me in my own faith development is that they have played numerous roles in my life, and they've played numerous roles in the lives of others. So they've affected my life, they've affected other people's lives, and then those lives affect lives that they come in contact with. One of the reasons that they've been important to me is that they is the way that they live out their own faith, giving me examples, the way each of them in his or her own way have sought to tell the truth of that faith in their own lives. We might want our cloud of witnesses to have strong lives of faith that hold up shining examples of how we should be in the world, and often they do. But our clouds of witnesses are also just made up of people. People just like us who stumble and fall, who struggle and fail. Often how they inspire us, though, is simply by speaking the truth to us in love, even when that truth is hard for us to hear. And often it is. We need those people in our lives who can speak the truth to us. Often how they inspire us is by speaking that truth, giving us that truth even when it's hard to hear. They live their lives to the best of their abilities, and they seek to find the truth of God's word and God's love in the world around them. These are the people to whom I am grateful every day, not because they're perfect, but because they show me how to continue to be persistent, continue to be in relationship with God and each other, and who continue on despite doubts and fears and whatever hurdles the world puts in their paths. And I think now is a really good time to transition to our other New Testament reading for this week. And that reading is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, verses 49 through 56. And Jesus said, "I came to bring fire to the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. I have a baptism with which to be baptized, and what stress I am under until it is completed. Do you think that I have come to bring peace to the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. From now on, five in one household will be divided, three against two and two against three. They will be divided, father against son and son against father, mother against daughter and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." He also said to the crowds, "When you see a cloud rising in the west, you immediately say, 'It is going to rain.' And so it happens. And when you see the south wind blowing, you say, 'There will be scorching heat,' and it happens. You hypocrites, you know how to interpret the appearance of earth and sky, but why do you not know how to interpret the present time?" Again, that was the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, verses 49 through 56. And I've mentioned it several times in both this episode and the previous half of this episode that each text this week has presented challenges. Each have been difficult in their own way or shown difficulties of faith. And we've wrestled with those challenges. But now in this gospel, we get a very, very unhappy Jesus. One of my pastor friends decided that she was going to name her sermon for this week, "Jesus Loses It," because it just jumps right in. I mean, it's the kind of text that makes me want to pull the covers up over my head and stay in bed rather than going to church to hear the gospel. There isn't even any lead up to today's text. It just jumps right in with Jesus claiming that he came to bring fire and then wishing that it had already come. Yeah, Jesus is cranky. And it's not the first time in these past chapters. In these past chapters of the Gospel of Luke, if you remember, Jesus has been on his journey to Jerusalem. The only time that he goes to Jerusalem in Luke's gospel. So it's the only journey to Jerusalem. He knows what is coming. He knows that the end is near. And so in those chapters, we get stories of hospitality, We get struggles with followers, excuses of why they can't come and follow him right now. We get that scene where he and his disciples are rejected by an entire village. And we also see Jesus who is trying to pass on as much as he could in the time that he has left, in this time that he has with his disciples as they are journeying toward Jerusalem and toward the cross. And we're going to talk more about that. We're going to talk more about the truth as is presented in this story. But we do have to take our final break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more about this gospel from Luke and the truth that Jesus tells us. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. Before the break, we read this gospel from the 12th chapter of Luke, and we got this picture of a very cranky Jesus. And I mentioned before the break that truth is one of the themes of each of this week's texts, whether it's telling the truth or being able to distinguish the truth or seeking that truth, even when it is told in love. Does not always bring pleasant results. If you remember from the first half of this episode, we talked about Jeremiah and the false prophets. These prophets who, they may have had good intentions. They may have been trying to bring hope to the people, but their prophecy, even though they said they had dreamed dreams, those prophecies were not based on God's truth. Jeremiah had been given words from God to give to the people. The people just didn't want to hear those words because they were words of judgment. And so Jeremiah had the truth of God's words where these false prophets didn't, even though they may have been trying to bring hope and comfort to the people. What they were doing, though, was not, in the end, hopeful or comforting because they were telling comforting lies, basically. And then we get this cloud of witnesses who told the truth or saw the truth, who didn't always have easy or pleasant lives despite their faith, but who give us examples of our faith, who show us how to live even in the difficult times, who give us courage and confidence to go forward. And now here we have this gospel from Luke, and we see that telling the truth, again, is not easy. Jesus has been teaching and preaching. He's been healing and traveling on his way to Jerusalem. And we don't know what set off this week's rather volatile and cranky response to something, but clearly he's meeting with resistance and he seems to have had enough already. Truth is not always easy to hear, but we do need those people in our lives who are willing to tell the truth. And of course, Jesus is always willing to tell us the truth, no matter how hard it is to hear. Jesus is reiterating that following the life of Christ, that following the life of being called as a Christian is not easy, and it may very well cause strife and division in our lives when what we are called to do puts us at odds with those around us. Sometimes what we're called to do puts us at odds even with our own family. We may feel we're called to do something in life. Our vocation is something that our families don't think we should be doing. Maybe they don't approve of it. And so we get put at odds even with our families, sometimes with our friends. And we need to keep the truth of God's word at the center of everything that we do. As we've been seeing these past weeks, Jesus is teaching about the reign of God as a community's highest good. There's lots of stories about hospitality and how we as communities envision our role in God's reign on earth. How sometimes this role can cause strife and division in those communities and in those families. Remember that example of Jesus saying, You know, you don't need to go and take care of whatever it is you feel like you need to take care of. You need to come and follow me now. And it seemed harsh at the time, but he's reminding us that faith isn't always easy, and it will put us out of step with our friends and our families and our communities around us. We need to keep the truth of God's word at the center of everything we do as a community. It doesn't mean that we then as communities will never disagree or have division, but it will at least give us that solid foundation to build relationships on. One of the commentaries, again, for this week was from Emerson Powery, a professor of biblical studies at Messiah College in Grantham, Pennsylvania. And he writes, here, meaning here in chapter 12 of Luke's Gospel, we get a glimpse of the apocalyptic Jesus, rarely discussed in the Gospels. Does Jesus really desire to scorch the earth? Probably not. This seems to be one of Jesus' many uses of hyperbole, common in his teaching. But why is Jesus so dramatic? Well, he rarely gets stressed. His awareness of the upcoming death, i.e. baptism, seems to be getting to him. The term stress, he writes, is from the Greek verb syneko, and it may be translated as distressed. It has the meaning of holding together, holding tightly, or squeezing. In Luke's gospel, it is associated with sickness, like holding on to a fever. Or holding on to stressful situations, like holding on to fear. Or sometimes Luke uses the term to describe crowds or enemies pressing in on others. Only Luke uses this term to describe how Jesus is feeling. The NRSV, the New Revised Standard Version's translation of the Bible, "What stress I am under," captures the verb well. And he continues, "Furthermore, Jesus recognizes how this stress is causing a shift in his own mission. From now on," Jesus says in verse 52, "so Jesus turns to violent images of masters in his parables to Peter and the other disciples, and for warnings about the need to avoid judges. This may not have been an outright critique of the legal system in his day, but Jesus appears to have little regard for judges with his eschatological outlook. He himself does not wish to play the role between quarreling brothers over inheritance rights, nor does he hesitate to tell parables in which unjust judges act. Jesus' advice to settle out of court is shared by Paul, although the apostle does not credit Jesus with his own advice. Jesus' point for followers in chapter 12 appears to settle their accounts on their own." So he's just trying to tell them it's not easy. He's not here to try to get into the middle of all these arguments. Telling the truth and deciding who is telling the truth often divides people. This is definitely a theme of the text that we've been reading this week. Truth spoken in love nourishes us even as it tears down in order to build on a solid foundation. And that's what we saw in the reading from Jeremiah, if you joined me for the first half of this episode. In Hebrews, as part of the great cloud of witnesses, we all need to speak the truth in love to one another in order to build good community, in order to support each other in that community, and that is not always easy. We also need those members of our own cloud to keep us honest and to tell us the truth, even though truth is not always easy to hear, and nor is it easy to say. I have one example of being involved in a group conversation during seminary. I don't even remember what the group was for or what we were discussing. I just remembered that I was actually being a little bit of a putz. And my friend commented to me that what I needed was to be hugged while gently being smacked upside the back of my head to remind me that I was being a putz. I was being a putz because I was, I don't know, frustrated or grumpy or unhappy or whatever it was. And I took it out in ways that I'm sure were very unhelpful and could have turned hurtful if I'd continued in those ways in this group at that time. I started off being kind of snarky and silly, maybe thinking I was joking or whatever, when really I was heading quickly toward passive-aggressive town on the freeway of grumpiness. I was just, you know, taking out my bad mood on the people around me. And this is where that cloud came in to tell me the truth. This is where our cloud comes in when we need to be told these truths. It's not to make us feel horrible, but to help us to see more clearly. You know, there's good ways to do this and there's bad ways to do this. You can obviously tell people the truth in harsh and horrible ways, or you can tell them the truth in love. And so the comment about me needing a hug acknowledged the grumpy, the frustrated or unhappy or whatever mood I was in. It acknowledged that she understood that something was going on. but then the gentle smack reminded me not to take out my mood on the people around me simply because they were convenient, because they weren't the source of my mood. So she told me the truth in love, but she did so in a gentle and loving way, and I appreciated that. The contemporary English version of Luke chapter 12, verse 51 is, "Do you think I came to bring peace to the earth? No, indeed, I came to make people choose sides." And it's not so much that Jesus intends to bring division. If you remember back to that commentary that we talked about just a few minutes ago, he asked, does Jesus really want to scorch the earth? Probably not. And so it's not so much that Jesus intends to bring division, but rather that division is often a consequence of choosing to follow Jesus or God's will, or not choosing to follow Jesus or God's will. Jeremiah and all of the Old Testament prophets could have ignored their calls. They could have chosen to remain silent, and yet they followed God often in ways that, you know, put them out of step with society, eliminated their friendships or their family relationships. And I don't know if this helps, if this makes this text easier to understand that Jesus came to make us choose sides. I don't know. But I think that looking at these texts through the lens of truth-telling has at least helped me to see them in a slightly different light. You know, we can ask the question, what is truth? And then we could spend hours, days, months, years, or lifetimes debating what is truth. But I think that the good news that comes out of this gospel text and all of this week's text is still the love of God. We can still go back to what I said in the beginning about the Beatles. We can still say all you need is love. At least all you need is God's love. And it does feel in these texts like we do need to dig for that love a little bit more. We need to wrestle with these texts a little bit more in order to find the hope, in order to find God's love. But maybe that's part of our calling for this week. Maybe that's part of this truth that is present in these texts, is that it's not always easy, and we do sometimes have to work to figure out where the truth and God's love lies in certain texts. What God does for us, though, what God does out of love, whether we can always understand that or not, God makes promises. God always keeps those promises, and God always does that out of love. So, as I said, what God does for us, God does out of love, no matter what. To separate the truth from the lies, we should always seek to discern if God's love is at the foundation of words or decisions. And I think that this will help us to discern the truth. I just want to say one more quick thing from a commentary that I read this week from Caroline Lewis, and she writes that life is not a competition. Faith is not a contest. And I don't think people need anything else by which to be reminded of their so-called inadequacies. Rather, life is about being faithful to your truth and then committing yourself to learn the truth of the other. Faith is knowing what matters to you when it comes to God and being willing to hear what matters to the other. I think that's really beautiful, the way that she put that, that it doesn't always have to be about competition or a contest. It means, you know, finding that truth, listening for truth from others, helping them to find truth, helping them help us find truth. And even with these images, I know that these texts, at least for me, will always be difficult to understand. And I don't necessarily have answers that will make them easier to understand. Maybe that's the point. Sometimes truth and the truth of God's love needs to be thought about, needs to be wrestled with, needs to be struggled with, needs to be pondered, taken in, digested, you know, just worked at, chewed on. It needs to have all of those things. We just need to sit with it for a long time and wrestle with it. And all of those metaphors, however you want to picture it, if you want to picture it as the race, if you want to picture it as wrestling, whatever. Sometimes God's truth doesn't come right away. Sometimes it needs to be pondered before we can see why it is the truth. And so that's where I'm going to leave you this week. I'm going to leave you to ponder. And I hope that your ponderings lead you to seek out and discern God's love in your life, to discern God's truth in your life. That's actually all the time that we have for today. So as always, I want to thank you for joining me as we discuss the readings from Hebrews 11 and 12 and Luke chapter 12 that were assigned for the week of August 14th, 2016. I hope you'll join me again on Saturday when we cover the Old Testament texts from the lectionary cycle for the week of August 21st. And those texts are from Isaiah chapter 58 and Psalm 103. Remember, you can always find all of the Golden State Media Concepts podcasts at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can download those podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud, and you can follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. Thank you for joining me, and always remember that you are a beloved child of God.